group that was. I mean, I literally had no idea what I was doing. I think the main thing was I tried to get into the green room. And for some reason, I went live because it's in the same kind of button. And as soon as I went live, I was like, oh, shit, I'm actually broadcasting to whoever, however many people are watching it. I haven't got my clothes on, I haven't got whatever. Yeah, let's sort this out. Actually, it's just a joke. I did have my clothes on. But it's one of those where you literally don't want the camera on, and I switched it off and the stream ended. And you can't restart a stream. So I have to set this up real quick. So anyway, we're live. So thank you everyone who's like jumped over rapidly from the other live stream. I think there's 42 people live now, which is actually...
Are we starting yet? Though? It's not even 4 o'clock.
It's gone out, mate. We're live now, man. This is all a mess. It's a mess. We may as well keep going. But basically, we've lost about 50 people. Hopefully, they'll find their way back, and that'll be all right. But welcome, everyone, to Brain Food Live on Air. This is issue 29, I think. I can't even see because I usually have on the title, but the title's, oh, my God, what a screw-up. And hopefully, we're going to have a good show. So the folks who don't know, we do this show every week. Basically, it is a review of the content that we discussed on the newsletter on Sunday, all the wonderful chats that we've been having in the Facebook group, which, by the way, I recommend everyone join. And we also have a focus topic where we get a bunch of experts on to talk about something that Adam and I know nothing about. So we've got a lot of choice on that latter part. Anyway, I'm Hung Lee. I'm your host for the show, and I'm joined, as ever, by my co-pilot and co-host and chief promoter, Adam Gordon. Adam, how are you?
Yep, I'm good, thank you. And so, listen, I'm not sure it's going to be that much of a screw-up because you are actually here, unlike the last 15 minutes of last week.
Right. Yeah, internet checked out and I couldn't get back on. The most bizarre thing ever. And the strange thing is that the show actually improved as I left, and I was very conscious of that. So I'm going to try and keep my chat to the minimum during the course of this hour we have, and let you and Akasha and Mitch do the talking. But anyway, how is things going? Things have been okay with you, Adam? Any updates on the side of what you're doing?
Nothing particularly interesting to update on. Of course, everyone's still on holiday in England, and so it's been actually a pretty quiet week. I don't want to say I've been bored. I've not been bored, but there haven't been any exciting things really happening this week like there have been the last sort of couple of months, except one, which is I sent you a message an hour ago and said I am just about to meet the original the guy who originally wrote Outrun.
So you said, yeah, as in the game, Sega game or something, wasn't it?
Yeah. He's just been in my office. He's a Scottish guy called Ian Morrison. He runs a tech sort of services company in Vietnam, but he's just moving. He's got 40 people in Vietnam who do basically work for mainly marketing agencies, digital startups, and it's basically everything tech, generalist tech business. And so there's not a lot of demand for video games in terms of where he has been, but there's some really cool things that we could do with him, to be honest. So
he's a customer. He's a potential user of Canada ID.
No. The opposite, actually. I think there's probably some Canada ID related product things that he might have some great ideas on. So we might actually. I'm actually hire him for a short period of time to work with us on some things. So,
mate, games developers, the geniuses, you know, they've got so many different constraints, additional constraints to creating a game that quote unquote normal engineers may not face. So I'm fascinated by that world.
He told me that he got feedback from McKinsey when he went for his interview with them in 1984. Which was the reason they weren't going to make him an offer was because they didn't appreciate him turning up with long hair and a tie-dye t-shirt.
Showstopper.
That's it. That was the only reason. That was the only reason that they weren't going to hire. Anyway, Outrun. That was cool. That was cool.
Yeah. Great game. And I see some old lags there that basically can see outrun Tony Pitchford, good friend of mine from Billingham. We know all about that. So fantastic. Yeah. Anyway, enough of the chit-chat. Let's have a look at what is happening with Recruiting Brain Food. Did you read it last week? And what did you enjoy from the issue, Adam?
Yeah, and that was probably the best Recruiting Brain Food this year from my perspective. I was interested in every single item.
Amazing.
So I'm finding it a little bit difficult to choose. When I thought about a short list of things, there was quite a lot to choose from. The first thing was I really loved Michael Wright's How to Hack Google Maps for Hiring. So he runs talent acquisition for North America for Group M, which is the media business of WPP. And effectively, when you go onto Google Maps, of course, you look at locations and what kind of companies are around there. And he's effectively turned Google Maps, the Group M Google Maps kind of click on it and it tells you about it. He's turned it into a recruitment marketing opportunity. So you could go and do, they've uploaded 80, what do you call it, like panoramic pictures, images that are embedded with picture yourself working here and things like that. You click through, you can do virtual tours. They've also done, what is it? It's not Cribs, is it Cribs? That MTV show about come and take my house? Well, they've basically done that around their office, which is in the World Trade Center. And they've got people who are kind of giving them a bit of a guided tour. And you can click through to all of this simply from their Google Maps, like pin image or whatever you call it.
Yeah.
Really smart.
On that note, I mean, it was a widely shared thing. Hat tip to a lot of people who shared that with me, by the way. Jim Stroud did, Stan Vasovich shared it. Everyone loved it. Actually, we came across it late because he launched that in July. But what a wonderful hack it was. Very simple. Google Maps, it allows you to upload pictures onto a location. So if you have an office and obviously you're recruiting people for that office, you can upload pictures on there because Google wants people to be able to identify from a map position what's going on in there. And of course, once you can upload pictures, that becomes a marketing opportunity. So high-res pictures go up and some really interesting and cool recruitment messaging that they put into those photos. So yeah, please do check out that YouTube video. Michael Wright, by the way, and I mentioned it on the Brain Food copy when I shared that link around. He's actually a really good content creator. And again, I classify him as one of those people that are very good at, first, he's got a job, so he's not a professional recruitment marketer. You know, he's a head of recruitment for this business. He does operational recruitment, but he's a wonderful writer. Very good on TV, as you saw with the broadcast, a multi-talented guy. People should follow Michael Wright, no question.
And he's an extremely expensive board advisor for tech companies. I know that. Anyway.
Have you got him in Canada ID? Or is it too,
no
too,
chance. I can't too, afford people like
too
that.
Too rich for your blood. Yeah, absolutely.
So the other aspect to that was the way that they're using the same kind of content for... They take VR headsets to career fairs and they just put it on and people can go for a walk around the office and go and see what it's like as well. So, you know, you would expect that from a creative agency. You would expect some cool things ahead of, you know, other businesses. But yeah, no, that was a real standout for me. The next one was guy from booking.com who did the blog about the T-shaped recruitment marketer.
Right. Yeah, that's right. That was a Yelmer. I can't get a second in. Zaudema, something like that. I think I've hashed your name totally wrong.
You're actually Dutch, you know. I don't understand why you're not pronouncing that perfectly.
Yeah, I left when I was three, man. So, you know, my Dutch is about as good as yours at the moment. But yeah, really good post, recruitment marketing. And that's kind of a little bit close to our hearts because we both love that. And he, what did he do? He kind of had a framework that was lifted from marketing or something, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, effectively, the T-shaped recruitment marketer to him is you've got a pretty broad understanding of all the different aspects of recruitment. You've then got a real base kind of framework around marketing. And then the mile deep bit is channels, formats, vid, you know, all the different things that you would need to be a brilliant recruitment marketer. I'm not sure. I think to be perfectly honest, I would have probably simplified it personally. I would have just had recruitment and then digital marketing is what I would have had just as the stem. But it was great to think about. Absolutely. Really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I think on a couple of points on that, I've just shared that link for people to review. It was very good because the framework itself is very interesting. The ideas you say, let's have the broad aspect and what is the mile deep aspect. Very good to visualize that. And also from a content creation point of view, he basically did some very cheap effect to create some animation onto the blog post, which was basically when people were sharing it, they were sharing this animation essentially. I think it was just a recorded video or something. I don't know what it was, or I turned it into a GIF. And ultimately that got tons of clicks. So it was the top rated or top viewed post of Recruiting Brain Food last week, and well-deserved as well. So check that post out for a number of reasons, both on the content and on the stylistics.
Okay, so the next one was Jonathan Kidder, is it? I think
he has
noted that Google are changing various, they're changing in the same way that Facebook is, they're changing their attitude towards privacy and how much information they want you to be able to take from different places and put in other places. So they've said that as of the 15th of October, they're just not going to be supporting certain extensions anymore. And those extensions are all of our favorites, like Duck Soup and Linked Helper and things like that. I think Linked Helper is basically dead anyway, but okay. So I think we all knew this was happening. We just didn't realize that the 15th of October was a date. That they're going to start. That doesn't mean they're all getting shut then. It just means they're going to start getting hardcore from them.
Yeah, and I think from the reading of Google's release, it just simply means that if you're going to use the, if you're going to build these kind of extensions, you've got to be explicit with the person who is using it as to what the data is going to be for. And that obviously is going to lead to a lot less people using those products. So the glory days of Chrome extensions and scrapers and all that type of stuff that we were using, of which I tried to build a big list, which I totally failed on. But anyway, lots of wonderful tooling out there. A lot of them are probably going to start degrading, if not being cut off immediately. So recruiting is about to get harder, I'm afraid to say.
Well, there's actually a list in that Wizard Sourcer blog. And the reason there's a list in that is because here's the list of things that might get shut by Google. So, if you want to start using some really cool extensions, go look at that list of things that are under threat and make use of them now. Yeah. For me, though, the question is, and we're going to do a show on, I think we've agreed we're going to do a show on this, is does this all mean that because sourcing is going to get harder, does this mean that we need to seriously invest in having being Irina Shamaeva, or does it mean we should forget about that and invest in being Michael Wright and being the recruitment marketing kind of wizard? There's ways of hacking both of these things. I mean, I do think you need both, but at the same time, if sourcing's getting harder, does that mean your need for being a Boolean wizard, etc., is more important, or forget it, it's just too hard now?
You know what, that is the topic of next week's show, isn't it? Sourcing or inbound, like how do you get your candidates? And I think you're right, it's going to be basically, no one's got the time to be expert at both, and we're probably going to end up having to make this very hard decision where you're going to double down on. Are you going to basically treat the internet as a place where you can just extract information, in which case a lot of the tooling that's been out there is going to go away. People aggregators, Chrome extensions, anything that scrapes. Privacy is a big deal in tomorrow's internet. It's going to get harder to do. So yes, you probably need to double down and be a little bit more like Irina, be a little bit more like Denis Dinkovich, for instance, and those OSINT guys, get really deep or technical. Or you do the Michael Wright approach and say, look, forget about trying to treat the internet as a place I can extract data. Instead, think of it as a place where I can draw data to me and become a magnet for talent. And that's the Michael Wright example. Joe Mullins is another one of our friends that would do a very good job of that. I think recruitment will basically bifurcate is the word. you like that word?
Yeah, I do actually. So I think we need to move on from that subject. But I just can't agree with Kaji on that. And I know that she's a sourcing expert, but she said sourcing isn't getting harder. It is. If things like Duck Soup and Linked Helper and other things like that are getting shut, if things like Lucia is under threat, if these types of tools are under threat, it is 100% getting harder. There's just no debate about that. It's definitely getting harder if you can't use these tools. It's never been easier.
I think Kasia's going to come on and have a chat about this later. But ultimately, it's about maybe it's an expression of the fact it's a changing game. I mean, a lot of these new tools that have come in are actually probably have given it a very short window. They've been around for 5-10 years. What were we doing before that? We were still doing recruitment. So obviously we had the skills there. But I think the idea of the golden era of free and cheap candidate data, I think, is coming to a close.
Oh yeah, like harvesting it all, absolutely, definitely.
Yeah, getting more expensive going forward. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what else, man?
Yeah, okay. So the new Facebook graph search. Right. So the solution isn't what you expect it to be. So JSON and Base64 are not programs that recruiters are going to be regularly using. JSON's a JavaScript kind of program, and Base64, can't even remember what it's to do with, but basically recruiters can't just put these things together and start doing Facebook graph search. There are some tools which will, there are some new versions of tools which will do it all for you. You put the information in and they do it all for you, but they're not very good because I've tried some of them. So there's no alternative to Facebook graph search yet, based on what I've read and seen.
It's actually an example. Again, I've shared it in the chat stream there, everyone. So if you want to check out what we mean, again, no surprises from the OSINT community. What they're doing is basically trying to replicate the outputs of Facebook graph search, having seen, graph search being shut down by Facebook for privacy reasons. And you can see how convoluted that approach is. Quite technical. You are getting down to the road of becoming kind of a semi-programmer type of way to do it. And you're right. This is like 1% of the recruitment industry would be able to even understand what that blog post looks like.
Yeah,
it is possible. And what will happen is you'll get a kind of a microcosm of these super technical sources that might be able to trade as trainers or be able to hack out these solutions on behalf of others. But it's probably not accessible to lots of folks out there that are still doing form work, let's say, still doing interviews, still doing other stuff. But anyway. Worth you having a look at, check it out.
I think you need technologists in your team to really put these things together for you. If you've got a technical sourcing team, they could, if you've got several people in a technical sourcing team, they could probably work out how to put it all together. But
in that argument, man, I mean, you look at TA, you should just hire identical people, someone who's a good 360 recruiter. Off you go, hire 10 of those. But if the world is going down the direction we see, you're going to have one or two people that are super technical, that can do stuff like the OSINT. Then you're going to get Michael Wright type figures who are great creatives and great on camera content folks and people like that. You're going to get folks like me who maybe do a little bit of everything. And then folks like you don't do much at all. And I joke. Anyway. What else is going on, Adam? Anything else in recruitment brain food that
we should talk about? Yeah, I mean, I've got so many more. I want to stop, but I don't. So Facebook's giving you the opportunity to say, no, I don't want Facebook tracking things I'm doing outside of Facebook.
Yep.
It's just that you go into the settings and it's a new option for you. It's not a big game-changing thing, to be honest, but I think that it's interesting that they are giving you the opportunity to control your own data better, which, quite frankly, they should have done from the start.
Yep, and that, again, implications on recruiting, and the comment I made on that is, okay, it looks like privacy is a major concern. Big tech is reacting to that, probably in a way that as consumers we would approve of. But suddenly we're finding, it's harder to find people than it was before. And it begs the question, how ethical is a lot of the recruitment work we actually do? We are kind of at that point where, you know, we're not getting a lot of consent when we get an email sometimes, you know, when we bang out a call, have we got permission for that? Generally, no. So we've got a lot of questions ethically, I think, that are coming our way as well in our industry.
So I was thinking about this morning, actually. If I mean, I know what somebody's email address is just because I know what it's going to be, right? If somebody messages me and says, take me off your database, and I'm like, you're not on my database. Well, take me off whatever you've got me written down as. I don't. I know that your email address is firstname.surname@morganstanley.com. You can't scrub my, you cannot GDPR scrub my brain.
No, and that's one of the challenges that we have. Like, what is a database? Like, what is permission? You know, you look at photography as a classic example of this. If you're walking down the street, I take a picture, you happen to be in it. Are you the subject of the picture? And can you come to me and say, I insist that you delete that picture? I say, look, man, I just took, you're on a public street. I took the picture, you happen to be in it. You don't have the right to tell me to delete that. So we are kind of, privacy in terms of and data control and all that type of stuff is, this is all new territory for us, ethically, legally, morally, everything. So it's going to be super interesting time to be around.
Yeah. Okay. LinkedIn's document, 50 okay. productivity hacks for recruiters.
Yep. Easy one.
Some of those were really basic stuff that everybody does, but some of them were really smart things that not everybody's going to think about.
Give me a smart one then.
Yeah, I loved it. Really enjoyed.
Which was a smart one that you saw?
Can't remember the specific one. There was a whole bunch of them. I just went, yeah, that's quite a good one. What about you?
I didn't read it. Sorry, I did read it, but I can't remember either. But I will read it now that I've been exposed publicly that I can't even remember it. So there were 50. Yeah. I reckon about 20 of them were really good. So worth diving into that document if you haven't done so already.
Jeff Bezos, his first ever job ad.
Yeah, wow. Amazing bit of internet archive, wasn't it?
OnGig scored it 78 out of 100, I saw. But I'm pretty sure that Textio gave it like a 4 out of 10.
Yeah. I mean, they should have done a comparison on that. But OnGig have got a new toy. They wanted to test it with a bit of clever marketing play. And they piped in Bezos' first job ad, which is for like a Unix programmer, I think they called it. I didn't realize you'd call him that, but there you go. That was what he was after. And apparently Bezos came out like pretty gender agnostic. You know, he did well back in the day. Was it 2005 that advert came out?
Yeah, and I mean, there wasn't an awful lot in there, was it? It was, employer branding wasn't his first thought when he put that together. And that was actually before they'd even settled on the name Amazon. Said it was Amazon. They just hadn't called it Amazon yet at that point.
That
was interesting. A couple of other things, which is not really brain food, but I see officially that Aileen has become Tengai's actual mom now.
Indeed. So this is our favorite robot interviewer, which people hate a lot. It gets a lot of hate. I think the haters don't get it, is my view. I'm a convert, so I was a former hater, and then I realized very quickly, hang on, there's something there. Tengai, the robot interviewer from Sweden, going to be speaking English soon, and our good friend Elin has become the CEO of that business. So fantastic to see that happen, and look forward to seeing how they take this further forward.
Yeah, a couple of things coming up that I'm excited about that I noticed you mentioned. One is True London in November. It's the 10th year of True. It's the 10th anniversary of True London, which was the first ever one. There's going to be 350 people at the Truman Brewery, 100 tracks on the one day, which seems like people are going to be spoiled for choice, and they're not going to get around everything they want to get around. But that's going to be a really, really good event.
It's going to be amazing. And can I just say, Bill Borman is the man behind True. And I know that he's kind of, he's no longer as visible as he was online. He used to tweet a lot and do all that kind of stuff. But he really is a guy that's well worth connecting with. I've just shared his Facebook with you there, because if you want to connect with him, you could probably get in touch with him about potentially running a track if you wanted to. It's going to be an amazing event. I know he's got something spectacular planned. For people who don't know the True events, essentially it is the unconference style. So no presentations, No experts really, no gap between the people who are doing the talking and the delegates that turn up. It's all about the conversation, and it's one of the best events around, I think. So get yourself there. Oh yeah, donation only on the ticket. So another thing from Bill, doesn't make money off it. It's literally pay what you think it's worth. It's worth 150 quid, no doubt. But go and pay tenner if that's what you think it's worth. So, but please check it out and do turn up. I will share the link to that event when I find it. And I'll share it with everyone on email later.
Yep. And we're both going to be at Hiring Success. You're going,
are
you?
Correct. I will be there. Yeah, I will be there. So I'm going to take the Eurostar. So this is my aim. Every time France or the Netherlands, no more flying. I'm taking the train. My tiny gesture to try and reduce my carbon footprint, which is massive. So yeah, looking forward to that. Another spectacular event. 2 days of. Not only looking at hiring success, but also radical diversity. It is radical stuff. So it's not just gender, it's not just ethnicity. It's stuff that deals with people who are truly marginalized, who never get the chance to get in. So we're talking about people who've gone through the justice system, for instance, people who've been in jail for 10 years. How do they get back into the world of work, which of course we need to be motivated to do. Refugees. How do people that currently don't have an ambiguous status in the country, how do you get them to contribute economically, which they want to do? People who've got significant disabilities, neurodiverse people, all these types of things. A profound event. Go to it if you're in Amsterdam. It's well worth it.
Cool.
Right.
That's me.
That's you. So anyway, Recruiting Brain Food's chock full of good stuff. Go and sign up to the newsletter. Issue 151 will be out on Sunday. It's going to be another stonker. But today we are going to be talking about something that's close to our hearts. Because you and I think, are quite good amateur bloggers. No one's ever paid you to write anything, I hope. No one's ever paid me to write anything. But I think we're pretty good at putting stuff out online and getting a bunch of people to read it, especially with regards to LinkedIn. And LinkedIn, of course, has become the kind of channel of choice for a lot of people in our industry, because the news feed actually gives you a potentially massive audience. So you can get 10,000, 20,000, 50,000, 100,000 views on something that you've written on LinkedIn as a status update. And I wanted to talk about that because I think recruiters don't know about it enough. And there's folks out there that are really good at it, including a couple of people that I've invited on. So I'm gonna bring on Kasia to begin with, and then we'll bring Mitch on a bit later. But Kasia, I'm going to bring you on. Kasia Tang, formerly Kasia Borovic, a good friend of mine, recruiter, so still an operator, now a trainer. And essentially, I think she's a really good, I call mini blogger. So in other words, someone who can write fairly short form and get a lot of people interested. Wrong person there. Jay, you nearly got invited on screen there. So this, I can see this show being a continuation of chaos. But Mitch, I'll bring you on in a sec. But I just want to get Kasia on to begin with. Hopefully we can get see how she is.
Hey!
Oh, there she is. Oh my goodness. Kasia, how are you doing?
Good, good.
Great.
Sorry, I can't wear earphones or a headphone.
No, that's okay. And by the way, when did you go blonde? I've always known you as like a redhead.
Yeah, it's quite new.
It looks great. I do dig it. It totally changes how you look, though. So I'm surprised and delighted, let's say.
Okay, good.
Yeah, you do. You look really different. I love it.
But I tell you what, this is the thing with ladies in particular, because guys typically don't change their hairstyle. Like, for instance, this has simply not changed other than getting older and grayer and less. That's essentially the hairstyle. But women seem to have a lot more kind of creativity when it comes to doing stuff with their hair.
It's difficult because you are trying to maintain your brand, but you don't want to get stuck in only, so It is tricky, which is why yellow, I got like 5 of these because it's my brand color. So that way, you know, it's me.
That's great. Was there a brand?
Even if your hair changes color, even if your hair changes color, you're just, we know it's you.
Can I just touch on this? Because this is actually quite interesting. Like changing your appearance, what is the effect on your personal brand? This is important to me because my Facebook picture, my LinkedIn picture is about 5-6 years old. And I'm terrified of changing it because it is so synonymous with what the hell I do now. That even though it no longer looks like me, I think, oh my goodness, I have to keep going with it. Because if I do change it, people are going to be shocked.
But it does look like you. I think
it does, exactly. Didn't change that much.
The moment you know you need to change your picture is when people meet you at an event, you tell them who you are, and they're like, what? I would have never recognized you. That's when I change mine.
That's when you're 10 years older and 50 pounds heavier, right? That's the joke. But yeah, I get it. Anyway, Kasia, great to speak to you. Great to see you. And the purpose of our chat, obviously, is talking about using LinkedIn as a content distribution channel. And I think you've been great at this. You and I have actually worked together on a few of these things to try and figure out how it all works. So I just wanted to kind of get your view on LinkedIn as a channel and why you think it is effective and how do you get to become an effective writer on this particular platform?
Right. I think like with any writing, the first thing you need to do is you have to write all the time. You have to do it often because it has to be a habit. And what I do now in training is I'll get people to write an update on LinkedIn in training using what we know about how the LinkedIn algorithms work and just details about what candidates want to see, shared online. And what I find is people are very reluctant to post for the first time. They're scared. They've grown a little bit lazy because they mostly will just share a link to a job ad without saying anything or just saying like, oh, check out this great opportunity, that's it. And they are scared to death of posting their first update. And I remember I was scared too at the beginning and it took me a while to just get over it. So yeah, I think it's most of all, it's just a habit that you need to maintain.
You know what? That's a really interesting thing to say. I don't know whether you saw, but there's a friend of ours called Andrew Stetsenko. He recently posted something on LinkedIn to say, I just did an experiment. I post on LinkedIn every day for 30 days. And here's what I found. And it was fascinating to see that because he had the discipline to say, I'm just going to do it and then see what happens. He did say as the first point he was never going to do it again because he found it traumatic in the end to force himself to do it that way. But I think writing is one of those skills. And I think Mitch, I look forward to seeing his views on it. It is one of those things that comes with practice. If you stop doing it, you'll end up not doing it at all. And the getting back onto it becomes so much more difficult.
Yeah, and a lot of actual writers say you need to write every single day, even if you don't like what you write. I'm not sure you need to post all of it. And I would say posting every single day on LinkedIn, way too much. No one wants to see that. But you need to keep at it.
Okay, so I'm going to challenge
this.
I don't think frequency is relevant at all. I don't think there's any validity in frequency being something that you should be thinking about. If you've got people often say, "Oh, how much is too much content?" There's no such thing as too much content if your content's brilliant. So posting 5 times a day on LinkedIn is absolutely great if your content is useful, relevant, and people get value from it. Posting once every year on LinkedIn is great if you've only got one thing that people are going to find useful. So I don't understand why. But I'm interested to know, Kasia, is there some logic on why you should do it regularly?
Yeah, so the reason is you don't want to post too often just because LinkedIn is going to decrease the visibility of your posts. So if you post every single day, and I think what Andrew said was when he posted every single day, he would never get past 10,000 views. And you want to reach a wider audience. And it's typically the same people who are most likely to see your content. So if you want to increase your visibility, you have to make sure that every single post gets more visibility. And when it comes to how you also want to do it regularly, just because, again, that will increase your likelihood of getting into someone's news feed, and it will increase the likelihood of people remembering who you are. I think this is very important. It's the familiarity bias, right? There are people that you recognize that you think, oh, that person said something smart one time, so I'm going to read this post just because of the picture that you see next to it, just because it's that person that it's coming from. If you only post every 30 days, for example, people are not going to remember you.
Yeah, I'm actually going to disagree with Adam on that. I think he's definitely wrong. If you sit there waiting for value, you're going to be sitting there for a long time. Yes, you can post overly too much, but I think you need to stick to some sort of rhythm that's comfortable for you. Number one reason for that is practice. There's a sense that, you know, you just got to keep doing it, whatever it is, whatever the frequency, just do it at a rhythm you're comfortable with in order so that you get it into your kind of muscle memory, so to speak. But secondly, in terms of how the algorithm works, as far as I understand it, and I look forward to seeing people like Chris Rainey and stuff like that who really know this, correct me on the stream of posts, but people are more likely to see your post if they've previously engaged with it in some way. So if you are super infrequent in doing this, then there's going to be not many people that are all viewing it. If you post it two or three times a week, which is generally my rhythm, you're going to get the right number of people engaging with it. They're more likely to see the next time. Then it means that you just simply get more traffic as a result of the time you're posting. So anyway, it's conjecture. We don't know how it works.
Well, Chris Rainey, who you just mentioned, has just said LinkedIn only punishes you if you keep posting the same type of content. So you've got to mix it up with the different formats that you share. But they're obviously, in terms of trying to play LinkedIn's algorithm, if there's an optimum amount of time, frequency that you should post, I'd love to know what that is. But I'm not getting any understanding as to, is that once a day? Is it once every 3 days? Is it once every 6 hours? Is it? We don't know that, do we? I don't think anybody knows that.
No, and they don't publish it.
We'll have to agree to disagree then, because I disagree with what you just said.
Okay.
I think the only way you can really know in the end is basically asking your network and notice, like, watching what your results are. And what I've seen is if I post every single day, people will say, oh, I haven't seen this update. The people who make a point of following my activity on LinkedIn. So clearly there's something happening there, you know, whereas if you post every 3 days, they can see them just fine.
I've just seen a comment by James Lawton. Thank you very much for sharing that. James has just said that he posts three times a day, and it seems that he's got a formula. Sometimes it's a quote, it's a video essay, it's something else. And according to James, he's noticed the view count go down. Now, I wonder whether that's an algorithmic penalty, as Chris potentially mentioned, or it could be people get bored of it. And kind of say, oh, it's James again doing his thing, and then have stopped viewing it. So that's very unkind, James. I wouldn't quite say that. But yeah, I mean, it's no one really knows, and of course LinkedIn are going to change it all the time anyway. But I think for your own self, it's a content channel worth using. Go to your own rhythm and establish some sort of rhythm, and you're going to be good. Okay, cool. What about the content type, Kasia? Have you got an opinion on what type of content seems to work on this platform?
I think I've tried just about everything except for video, because I hate video. Everyone keeps telling me you need to do video, but no, I don't. I mostly just promote my own blog right now, or I will, you know, try and spark a discussion on some topic to get some inspiration for the blog, and both seem to work just fine. My I'm very proud of this. My personal best was getting 1,000 people, different people, to view a blog post in one day. So for me, that's huge, you know, for just my personal website. And with the discussions, it works well as well, because people feel like they've contributed something to the content I've created. So they're more engaged, you know, they want to make sure they read the post because they want to see if they're mentioned or if their points are mentioned. I also, you know, I actually make a point of trying to learn from others when I do it. So it's not just for show. It's also to make sure I'm learning as I go along. And then everything I've learned, I share with everyone else.
Yeah.
So as I understand, video generates more engagement than any other content format. So, but you don't do it, Kasia. Is that just because you don't like videoing yourself?
You know what? I've tried it once. That wasn't on a company page. But what I've seen as well, it got way more views and interactions on the platform than anything else. The click-through rate was close to zero. So my point is to get people outside of LinkedIn and to have them visit my blog. So if that's the point, then I don't want to share a video because that's just going to make them feel like, okay, I've seen what there is to see right now, that's it, right? I want to make sure that there's some action associated with the posting. So that's why I don't share video. I know I don't have to film myself, and I recommend Lumen 5 for anyone who hates being videoed but still wants to use the format. It converts text into video. So if you just want to game the algorithm, that could work fine.
Tell me, share the link, please. I want to game the algorithm. Can you just
literally lumen5.com, Hung.
Okay. Can someone search for that and share it in the chat stream, please? I'm going to get on it straight away. Well, listen, I mean, video, I think there's some people who are amazing at video. And, you know, I think your friends at Odro are very good. Obviously, they're a video business. But Ryan McCabe, I think, is really good at doing that to the camera stuff. Adam, you're not bad, I've got to be honest. You know, with your walk and talks, I thought they were quite effective. There's a few career coaches and, you know, people that do that kind of life coaching stuff that are quite prominent. Ruby Lee, a lady in Australia, she pops up my feed all the time and she seems to be very successful doing this. And in fact, I think she set up a business just literally coaching people on how to convert a hustle into the main gig. So I think whatever works for your particular personality and your capacity, that's probably, you know, a central part of it. So you can take the formula, but you've got to kind of understand that, does it work for your particular characteristics?
It's not just the personality, though. It's also the content that you're trying to convey. In my case, when it's instructions for how to go about doing something when you're sourcing, obviously, it's easier to do that in writing and include some pictures. So I'll do that in the blog, right? Because it's a little bit too technical for people to have to, you know, watch a video and just do it. They would have to watch the video a couple of times. So it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think native video versus LinkedIn video is the next thing that is the main thing, isn't it? You know, it's interesting. I know nothing about it. I need to get better at it. But we're talking about writing in this particular case. So let's stick to that. And in particular, I'm quite keen to bring on our next guest. I'm a bit worried, actually, because, you know, good friend that he is. He is his own man. So I do wonder how he's going to react to some of the commentary that we've got. Kasia, please stay on the line. We're going to go four-way this time. So I'm going to invite Mitch Sullivan on. People who don't know Mitch, he is the 51st most famous blogger on LinkedIn, I think. There he is. Mitch, how are you doing, sir?
Good.
Great to see you, man.
Likewise.
And sorry for the mix-up. I know that sort of, you know, I was instructing you on technical stuff before the show, and I ended up completely messing everything up. So I beg your pardon. But Mitch, I just want to say you are, I think, very well reputed as one of the best copywriters in the industry, particularly in the form of some of the short form that I've seen on your blog posts, and also in this media of LinkedIn. So, you know, every time I see you post something, I follow your stuff, of course, I'm seeing like hundreds of people comment and engage and what have you. So delighted to see you on there. And I'd love to kind of learn a little bit more about what your thoughts are on LinkedIn as a content platform, really.
Okay, well, look, I'm coming at this from a... Can you hear me okay, by the way?
Yep, I can hear you fine.
Okay. You know, I consciously started using LinkedIn around 2011 properly because I decided I was going to move into coaching and training, and all of my target audience from LinkedIn. So it was kind of a no-brainer to decamp there and do what I do. So I practically live there.
It's like an extension of the office.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
So it was you did it initially because the audience was living in the place. This is the natural place for it to be.
Yeah.
What have you learned about all? Because you must have written something like a million words on LinkedIn, I would guess. Like, what have you learned through the exercise of doing that you could share with the audience that's listening in here?
Bloody hell, that's a big question. Huh? Could you not have narrowed that slightly? What have I learned?
It's a terrible question, I know. It's
really awful. What have I learned? I don't know. Look, I perhaps take a, maybe this is one of the areas where I reveal my old fashionedness, but you know, I'm a content guy. I'm reasonably creative. I'm pretty good at coming up with metaphors to describe things or to express things in a way that I feel, based on my training, will get more people to at least notice it and then start reading it. So that's what I do. As far as strategy goes, look, I've got training to sell. So, you know, a lot of the time I'll start conversations around aspects of that training, partly just to be associated with some thinking around that subject or an opinion, which is perhaps more accurate. But also you learn from people's reactions and things that people say and counter arguments that people might make. And obviously I run ads for my courses, and I try as often as possible to make those ads as interesting to look at as possible. And it seems to have worked because it's getting much, much easier now to sell tickets to those copywriting courses than it was, say, a year and a half ago.
And that's based on, so there's two ways in which you're driving ticket sales. Number one is through kind of a conversational marketing on LinkedIn. Yeah. And number two is writing LinkedIn ads and then pumping it through that way. Have I got you right there?
No, I wouldn't. No, I what I mean by an ad is I'll post a status update about my copywriting course.
Yeah. Got it. Yeah.
And the other thing that perhaps hasn't been mentioned yet, I don't think, I haven't listened to all of it, is that I think you can develop, and it takes longer what I'm about to suggest, but I think you can develop a reputation or an association with a certain kind of thinking by commenting on other people's content. I do that 20 times more in terms of word count than I do, you know, post articles or updates on LinkedIn. And that, you know, that's getting into the long grass, but that's where the interesting stuff happens.
Well, I want to know. I want to know whether LinkedIn has become. I mean, you're selling a lot more tickets more easily for your courses, for example. You just said so. I want to know if that's because LinkedIn's got better, because you've got better, or because actually what you do is an idea that's time has come, because content and recruitment are like absolutely interchangeable concepts today. Content drives recruitment. Every aspect of recruitment can be driven by content. So I just wonder if actually what you do, its time has come.
For it to end, or its time has come because...
No, its time has come for it. This is it. You're at the, you know, we're at the top of the hill now, and the hill goes on.
I have no idea. I don't know. I try not to second guess the future, but yeah, things have... LinkedIn functionally is so different to how it was just, I don't know, 4 years ago, 3 years ago, let alone 16 years ago when I first created an account. It's a great, I thoroughly enjoyed the platform. You know, I like the posts that are a little bit Facebooky, you know, because it just sheds more information on people. So it's not just about recruitment or copywriting or job ads. Yeah, there's I try to mix the content up a little bit as well and mix up the kind of stuff that I comment on. So, but yes, it's an easy place to spend a lot of time, particularly if you've dedicated, you know, my basic marketing strategy is baked into LinkedIn. So, you know, yes.
So what type of thing generates when I mean, if you 20 times more words that you put on LinkedIn or commenting on other people's things. What are the things that you do on LinkedIn that generates the most number of people coming and looking at who you are?
I don't know. It comedy, you know, it's posting something that's funny, something that takes the piss out of something or someone else. That's worked for me numerous times.
Well, like Hayes, for example.
That tends to get mentioned, sure. Yeah, and look, just for the record, had I known what was subsequently happened after that, I wouldn't have done it, by the way. Yeah, so, but yes, I came out of that relatively unscathed, as it happened. But yeah, and I guess that takes a certain amount of bravery, which not everyone has.
Do you think...
Well, you don't have a boss, do you? So
I was about to say that one point. I mean,
not officially, no.
Maybe people that are employed, I mean, Kasia mentioned, hey, listen, you know, people are very reluctant to post.
Yeah.
I just think, hang on, maybe if they're employed by a business and they've got certain, sure, like, restrictions, say, yeah, listen, yeah, totally, this, that, and the other, you can't do this. I wonder whether that is in the back of their minds, like, putting a break for them to be as free with their expression as perhaps all of us are, which, you know, literally.
Yeah, totally agree. So yeah, it's not a criticism, absolutely. I guess the next question is do companies need to loosen up in terms of how they allow people to express themselves online? That is a really interesting debate.
Well, recruitment companies in particular, and especially the ones that create clones. So the recruitment companies that create clones, they actually don't want their people to be visible online because they want their brand to be the important thing. They don't want candidates or clients to actually form relationship, long-term relationships with individual recruiters. They want to form relationship. They want the candidates and clients to form long-term relationships with the brand. So it's actually kind of counterintuitive to their objectives as a Michael Page or a Hayes.
Yeah, look, if that's a conscious strategic thought on their part, then yeah, I think that's pretty dumb as well. I agree. I'm not sure it is, though. It may be subconscious. I don't know.
Oh, no, it definitely is. It's a policy. Okay. For some businesses I know, it's an active policy, which is we don't want our people to be particularly famous. They're not allowed to go and talk on stage. Their LinkedIn profile has to have X amount of, you know, information, and here's the parameters. They're only allowed to post about jobs. And they're not allowed to give an opinion.
Yeah, look, I think it's stupid. It's about as stupid as inventing the printing press and then banning people from learning how to read, you know.
But it's also a risk. If I've got 500 recruiters and I go and enable them all to build personality and really build a following based on that personality, in a year's time, I'm going to have created 500 independent recruiters and I'm not going to have anybody working for me. So it's also a big risk.
I've just seen an incredible comment that Christine has made. Have you read that? I've come across one agency that uses false names. So they're so concerned about this issue, about their consultants potentially leaving with business or leaving with customers, that they've instructed them to use false names, which has got to be against the terms of use on LinkedIn platform, right?
And they're probably brilliant. I've seen agencies do that in the past, albeit not for quite a long time. But look, it's monumentally stupid. It really is. But it, you know, equally, it tells you a lot about that recruitment business and how it does business. You know, I would probably wager that a lot of them are boiler room type operations, very functional. You know, very spot trading in their approach.
But that's a valid business model, though, isn't it? I mean, it happens in accountancy firms and law firms and consulting firms and. You know, people don't get paid very much in the first couple of years. And then they probably, once they've got enough experience, they go off and work somewhere that is actually going to be, you know, treat them more professionally, give them the opportunity to flourish and take training with somebody like you, Mitch, and go and take all of the kind of skills they can develop from you.
I've got no argument for me. I totally agree. I think it's, you know, there are more and more progressive recruitment businesses out there, but they're all quite small at the moment. So let's hope they grow.
Can I ask a question on the people that go to your training courses, Mitch?
Yeah.
Are they, I mean, can you see them coming from a certain type of agency? Are they big agency, small agency, solo player? Is there a pattern that you've spotted?
Yeah, look, I tend not to measure things, you know, numerically, but by wetting my finger and sticking it in the air, roughly on the open courses, the split is roughly 60-40 agency to in-house. Interestingly, most of the in-house participants tend to come from smaller companies. We've done some corporate gigs as well, some corporate courses for companies that are big enough to have 8, 10, 12, 15 internal recruiters. As far as the types of agency recruiters, again, I would suggest that the majority come from agencies that are smaller than 30 people in general.
Well, that's probably because...
I had one recruiter come from Hayes, but he paid for it himself.
Yeah, yeah. There's no budget. Wow. The bigger companies, there's no budget, though. I mean, literally, you're just a unit. You're literally there to make money. They're not going to spend a penny on you. And I think that's just the economics of running an agency of that scale. You know, it's money in, money out type of business. And, of course, you know, they make a lot of money. So no shocks there.
They've got formats for everything, though, right? So they've done a lot of analysis on what works and what doesn't work. And then they want everybody trained in exactly the same way. So they're not going to buy Mitch Sullivan to come and train their Bristol team if their Edinburgh team's doing something completely different. They want complete uniformity across their group. So the only way they could get Mitch Sullivan would be hiring Mitch for a year to go around the world and working with the whole business.
It's never going to happen.
No, of course.
You know what? I have seen that with some of these bigger professional services companies that have identikit bios, identikit pictures and everything. The backgrounds are all the same. No personalization whatsoever. And you think, yep, it's a clone business. They just want a bunch of clones. And you think that's probably very 20th century, I think.
But do you want a lot of personality from your lawyer?
I would say, yeah.
I would say no. You want them to just know that they're going to do a good job and they're not going to be focused on trying to generate attention.
But it's still a business where you're going to deal with people, right? I mean, to the point where that person is your service provider, then I think, I personally would love to have someone who you could actually talk about the business with and not have, you know, a strained relationship with. But I get your point. Certain roles and certain functions, perhaps you don't need to be a massive marketeer doing that. I just want to sort of address Andre Dos Santos. Andre, by the way, great to see you. And I need to speak to you about Portugal job boards, by the way. So I'll ping you later. But he's asked a very specific question about, like, what is his approach to recruiting these technical people? Is there anything practical we could give advice to this fella? If he's using LinkedIn as a content platform, not just as a database to find people, but he wants to attract individuals, how does he go about doing that, would you say?
Are you asking me?
Well, any of you two. I mean,
assuming the people he wants to attract are potential candidates for jobs, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it something else? Is it clients? But if it's the former, then he's going to already need to have an audience of people. And he's going to need to put out job alerts, for want of a better term, that are more interesting than the other job alerts that are put out, because they're more likely to get looked at, responded to, and shared. And the more they're looked at, responded to, and shared, the more people are going to see them. Because, you know, if he puts out an ad for a structural engineer, and it's a good ad, more structural engineers will look at it, and more people will share it, which will mean more structural engineers will see it. You know how that works. So
what is a good ad? What is a good ad, Mitch?
I'm trying to give advice without telling him he needs to come on my copywriting course.
Andre's in Lisbon. He's not going anywhere. But okay. Yeah, he could probably do that. But
buy a book on copywriting. Seriously, I'll happily send you links to two or three that I've read that I know are very good. They're not about recruitment, but they'll teach you how to structure your writing in such a way that it's more likely to get people's attention and to get them to read to the end of what you've written.
I think Claire's point there is very, very true. Job sharing, link sharing job posts simply doesn't work. So please don't do that. If you look at sort of what recruiters actually do on LinkedIn in terms of using the feed, it's 99% link sharing. And it literally is, you're just contributing noise there. No one pays attention.
Okay.
I think the things that I've seen are effective is when kind of people talk about not the job itself, but sort of why the job exists. You know, we've got this business problem, folks. We're trying to do this. We don't know how to do it. can you help? That sort of approach seems to work a lot better than a laundry list of, hey, I need 5 years of this, please share this post. Like, no one's, you're recruiting for the same job, but you're almost, your approach is totally different.
I absolutely agree. And challenge is one of the big motivators for people in general when considering another job. But normally what's associated very closely with that challenge is the perception that they're going to learn something. And so if you, the producer of that content, can be more explicit about what they'll learn by facing up to this challenge or helping them solve a particular problem, will help sell the job, because people generally want to try and become better versions of themselves. And if they see a job that will push them, stretch them, give them a bigger platform for which to do what they do, they're more likely to be interested. But it's got to relate to their needs. You know, it can't be help us solve this problem because we want to grow to 100 million. You've got to express it in ways that will benefit them, not the company.
There was I think, if I may, there's a...
I didn't realize Kasia was still there. Kasia,
yeah. You won't allow me on video, but I'm here.
Why are you not on video? I thought you disappeared.
I don't know. I'm not allowed. I can't seem to turn it on. But anyway, the point I wanted to make is, and watching the Twitter conversation today, I had a small epiphany. There's a very famous literary character that's kind of like every single one of us. That's, don't laugh at me, Winnie the Pooh. One of the things that we learned about him, and I only know the Polish translation, but basically he only liked stories about himself. So you do want to use storytelling for, you know, generating interest, but you have to make sure that those stories are built around your audience and not yourself. So
yeah, totally agree.
If you talk about how exciting your business is, great, that excites you because you're the center of that story. But you have to make sure that your audience is the center of the story. Otherwise, you're going to end up being the only person getting super excited.
Yeah, I yes and no. A job ad's not a story.
It has to be a story, though. Of course it's a story. It's a story of... This is a challenge that we're facing. You, as the hero of this story, will overcome this challenge and, you know, become super successful. That is the story.
Adam, talking creatively, a job ad can literally be anything. It can take any format. If it gets people to read, they see something in them, in it, they read to the end, They think, yes, this is something I'm interested in, and they respond. I've seen ads that have just been it's just been dialogue between two people, but it's about some aspect of that job. An ad's only purpose is to get somebody to click apply, send a CV, make a phone call, send an email, send a LinkedIn message or social media message. That's it.
I couldn't agree more. I posted a 40-second video on LinkedIn back in January and hired four people from it. So I agree it can take any kind of format, but I think that you really have to understand how much or otherwise the company is able to actually say there's a big difference between what a Barclays can say in a job advert and maybe a tiny startup company that doesn't really have that much to actually say.
Okay, look, Adam, we're straying into that territory on that conversation we had on Twitter the last couple of days. And we've ended up talking about job advertising, which is not necessarily what I was prepared to do. But look, the bottom line...
Don't invoice me. Kasia brought it up.
But it's also because I think there is a...
And also, I actually have to go. I'm really sorry. I'm just going to bow out quietly. I actually do have to go.
Thanks. No worries. Adam, I'll see you later.
I think there's a possibility that we're not discussing, well, we should, which is there's a hybrid approach to this. You don't have to advertise a job. What you need to do is make sure that your target audience, your potential candidates, get engaged in a LinkedIn post, some sort of discussion, and then you can basically approach every one of them in an individualized message. So it's a hybrid approach of, it doesn't have to be a job ad, but in the end, you're going to talk to these people about a job, right?
You know what? I think you're right, Kasia. And I just want to touch on something that Andy Foote mentioned. And Andy would be great to get on the show, actually, because he's a little bit more on the technical side in terms of trying to understand how the algorithm works. But he basically said, look, what you want to do is to get distribution at maximum view counts, because that gives you a better chance of getting more people to potentially look at it. There's no point running a beautiful ad if no one sees it. It's only you and your mom. No problem doing that. What needs to happen is you need to get 10,000, 15,000, 50,000 people looking at it. Then from there, you've got a chance of getting people who might be prospective candidates.
Well, right, but my argument is your best chance of getting somebody to look at anything that you've written is it for it to be well written or interesting in some way, or controversial or funny or thought provoking or something.
And I think this is on Kasia's side. And Kasia, I'm going to kind of jump over you sometimes because I can't see your face. So I don't know whether you're going to try and say something, but you interrupt me and you tell me you want to speak. I think the storytelling thing that Kasia mentioned was super interesting because isn't there like narrative arcs that are generally true of like this general themes as to what all stories are? Like a hero's journey is one, rags to riches is another, all these types of going back to Greek tragedy type of things. There's a certain pattern of how stories work and why they're popular. And maybe you can weave some of that into the copy you write.
You know what? I'm going to interrupt you here if I can. I bet it's possible. I'm not that great at it yet, but having read Made to Stick, I actually like the idea of not necessarily coming up with your own stories to engage people, but looking out for stories that you can share with people. And I think it all goes back to understanding the role, understanding the brief, getting a proper brief. If you know what the role is, what challenge the business is facing, why the business wants to hire someone, you know the story. You have a story to share, right? So
absolutely.
That coupled with a basic understanding of LinkedIn's algorithms, and it's not just the algorithm. It's as simple as you're only ever going to see the first two lines of a LinkedIn update in your feed, right? So you need to make sure that you use the first two lines to gather attention, to have people to click to see more.
Come again, Kasia. Can you repeat what you just said there?
Yeah, so basically, like, one thing is understanding how to write a story, but the second thing is understanding how LinkedIn worked and that it will only show the first two lines of whatever you share in someone else's feed, right?
Right.
So they have to click to see more. What I see recruiters in Poland doing very often is in the first line, they say, "Dear network," and then there's space, and that's all you can see. Why would anyone care, you know?
So this is like an email subject line, isn't it? Like, you've got to have an arresting headline of some type to get the person to at least click more. Isn't there a link where you kind of click more or something and you see actually a little bit more of the post? So the visibility side of it, you get two lines, no matter how many, I don't know how many characters that is, but not very many. Two lines basically to get the person to see more, and you've got to make value out of that.
I believe it was Cortazar that said writing short stories is more difficult than writing a novel because you only have the first paragraph to actually capture someone's attention. And this is true to writing on LinkedIn. You have the first two lines. That's it.
What is a good opener then, Kasia? I mean, what do you know that has worked for you in terms of an opener of this type?
I ask questions because my target audience is recruiters, and one thing they all have is opinion. So some of them won't even read the post. A lot of them won't ever click on the link, but they will sure as hell comment on the post if there's a question that they think they can answer.
Give me an example. I think I agree with you. Questions are the way. But what can you give me an example of the sort of content, precise one that you've used recently that worked?
Recently, I would ask what's the most important questions to ask during a briefing with your hiring manager? As simple as that. Everyone has the one question. It's easy to answer for people. I have my own list. I'm sharing a blog all about it, right? But asking people means I can update my blog post, and they will, if they have an answer, they'll comment. If they don't, they'll read the blog post.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. asking questions is a direct solicitation to the audience to contribute. I think sometimes when you talked about people being a little bit fearful of posting on LinkedIn, equally we can presume some people are fearful of commenting on LinkedIn because they're not sure whether the person wants that. But if you ask a question clearly, say, "Hey, listen, I need help," then you know it's pretty clear that you're welcoming individuals into your story. Cool. So let's leave. I mean, we're kind of a little bit over time, but I want to leave the audience with a few takeaways. So Mitch, if I can go to you first on this. If there's one bit of advice that you can tell people that are thinking about using LinkedIn in order to drive views for whatever reason, whether it's hiring for job, hiring for people, or getting clients or whatnot, what advice would you give them?
Look, I'm not going to get into it. If you're talking about just general content because you want to get noticed and you want to build followers, then I'd rather answer that question from that perspective rather than how to get more candidates to your job ads, because it'll take them too long.
Sure.
So look, what generally works for me is I read a lot more than I write, believe it or not. I read a lot of threads. I read a lot of people's comments. I join in on a lot of them. Where a lot of my status updates have come from is I've started making a comment in response to somebody on a discussion. And I stop and I think, hang on a minute, this is good enough to be on its own. And so I cut and paste it out, play with it some more, and then I'll put it up as a status update or save it until the next day.
I love it. Let me stop you there, Mitch. That's as a content generation technique, it's actually to get involved in conversations elsewhere and potentially just through having the dialogue, that creative kind of a mix of speaking to people online, you might actually say or think of something that could be a really useful mini blog. Great idea.
Good content comes from good thinking in general.
Cool. And I love the fact that you read more than you write as well. I think that's critical also.
Sure. And look, equally, status updates then sometimes turn into blogs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because then I'll post something, people will respond, it'll generate additional thinking around that subject, and then I'll expand that status update into a 500-word blog. Then that will go on my website. I'll then post a link to that a week later. And then very occasionally, I'll transfer one or two of my blogs to a LinkedIn article if I think it's capable of getting a good enough reaction, or if it's topical for the moment.
Mitch, you've kind of hit on a few money shots right here. I mean, we've spent an hour on this show, but suddenly it's all coming. And this is great. So essentially, it's rethinking about repurposing the content, but it's also using the engagement to create the content, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you're not just forcing yourself to sit in a blank room just coming out with genius material. You're actually just engaging with people. And from there, that creative aspect, probably the most natural way in which we create content is through interaction. You can then capture that and you could distribute it. Fantastic. Okay, Kasia, if you're still there, can you give us something that you would give as advice, like the one thing that you should push to people who are thinking about using LinkedIn as a content channel?
Right. I think so. The first thing is what Mitch said. The second thing for me is if you're using LinkedIn for a specific business purpose, measure what you're doing and look at what works and what doesn't. I would I look at the number of views, of impressions of my LinkedIn post, and the number of clicks on the links that I have. And I always look at the click-through rate. So if that's very low, then clearly I'm not pushing people enough to click on the blog. Maybe it's not, you know, the call to action didn't work too well. This is what I want. So I tie it all to a couple of measures that I want to make sure that work. And just educate yourself around some things that work. I read Made to Stick. I'm going to Mitch's course. So we'll see. I'm assuming I'll be much better at this afterwards.
Yeah, excellent stuff. I mean, I think we do need to have some basic marketing know-how, don't we? I mean, when you're talking about tracking links, LinkedIn gives you a little bit, but of course, use a UTM or something like that to help you understand and track that off platform. Andy Foote has also mentioned some interesting things. Where do you put the link? Stick it in comments rather than in the main post. I'm not sure that I agree entirely with that, although I'm an amateur. Go ahead, Kasia.
The major problem with that is you're trying to think of your own goals at the expense of your reader's convenience. I would never put it in the comments because it's so difficult for me to find a link in the comments. So I want my audience to find it easily. I delete the page preview because I know that works better, but I'll make sure the comment is in the original post. Even if that gets fewer impressions, the click-through rate will be much higher.
That's very interesting. And I think in this regard, you might not be in disagreement with Andy on there, just with a slightly kind of different output. But yeah. The final thing I'll leave you with, you're right on getting rid of the image preview, right? I get rid of that all the time. It's text-only copy. That's my approach. Unless you deliberately stick an image in there, but it isn't kind of part of the link preview. So in other words, if you stick a link in the main post, it will pull in a preview image. I find that when I keep the image, the preview image in there, it kills the damn post. So I habitually just get rid of that. Go text only, link in post seems to work. Okay, listen, folks, I think someone said we need a round two of this, and I think absolutely we're right. We should definitely get this and talk about LinkedIn again. Definitely talk about copywriting again. I think there's a number of ways we can go. It's been super fascinating to get you two on. Thank you, everyone, for bearing with us, and hopefully you've enjoyed the show. My apologies for messing it up in spectacular fashion at the beginning. And thank you, everyone, for jumping onto this stream. Next week, we are going to be talking about sourcing versus inbound. The big two things that Adam talked about in the first at the beginning of the show. How are you going to do it? Jim Beresford, thank you very much for sharing a True London link. That's awesome. Please click on that. That's worth going to. I will be there. Mitch, I think you're going to be there as well. Kasia also. It's going to be amazing. But this is us signing out. Thank you for watching Brain Food Live on Air. I'll see you next week.
Cheers. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.